You're listening to No Plot, Only Lore, a podcast about games and the tables we play them at. Your DMs tonight and every night are Josh and Chris. You can find us on all podcast platforms or check us out at noplotonlylore.com. If you like what you hear today, please rate and review the show and share it with everyone you've ever met.
Welcome back to No Plot, Only Lore, my mom's favorite D&D podcast, because she doesn't actually listen to D&D podcasts. I'm joined today.
I was going to say, get her to name her second favorite D&D podcast.
I'm not sure she could name any of them. And today we're going to be talking about house rules. How do you feel about house rules, Josh?
I'm for them. I'm sorry. I'm going to be a little bit what's the word I'm looking for? Diplomatic about house rules.
Okay.
Today I know I am usually the voice of the extremes on this podcast. Okay. But I think house rules are one of the few places where you need controlled restraint. 'Cause they can definitely serve a good function and can definitely get wildly out of control.
Okay, so does this mean I'm bad cop this week?
Is that... You're bad cop today.
Okay, I guess. House rules. Fuck your house rules in particular. I can't believe what you have done to the absolutely perfect rules as written in D&D 5th edition. And if you want to play any of your homebrew bullshit, then you should absolutely just go write your own fucking game.
Oh, right. Are we going to talk about the raw guy this week?
Or fucking better. Oh, my God. Okay,
the professional DM who doesn't house rule things. Perfect.
Yeah, I don't have that page up, so we're gonna have to leave that for a little bit. But goddamn, yeah. No, okay. I think house rules have a place, right? Like, they're an important way, for me at least, as a DM, to tailor the game experience to what it is that I'm trying to accomplish with the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
They don't always work the way that I intend them to. Uh-huh. And I am definitely guilty of going way off the deep end with them.
Right.
There have been a couple of occasions where I have just like, I have gone and made my own game in the middle of a game and then made that game into the game that I'm designing.
Right.
That's not great. That hurt everyone, including me. But a lot of times, like, small sparse uses of house rules can enhance the flavor of the thing that we're doing. Are you using any house rules in the games that you're playing right now?
Yes. Yes, we are. Just a few, but they are filling in the gaps of places that the 5th edition rules, I think, either weren't very clear or just worse than previous editions.
Right.
My most basic example being, we like to use the charging rules closer to 4th edition than 5th edition.
How do you deal with fighters that get that as an ability?
They get it as an ability. Great. Okay. We don't play with a lot of fighters.
Okay. Yeah.
We don't play with
fair.
A lot of charging. Like, it's just like, we thought it was very dumb that like running forward with the sharp end pointing out was somehow complex.
Right.
Especially if you're like using your move to make two moves.
Okay. I'm also using a few house rules in the game that I'm running right now. And those ones are a bit more, I want to say, like, high concept in their execution. So the two house rules that we're using, well, we have a couple of others, but the two core ones that we're using are, I know a guy, and flashbacks.
Yeah.
So we're using the hero point system in the DMG. So you have a certain number of hero points that you can spend to add 1d6 to a d20 roll.
Okay.
And as an optional payment, you can pay one hero point to do a flashback. so that you can describe how your character prepared for the situation that you're in currently in the past.
Yep.
And then the I know a guy, every 5 levels, you can tell me that I know a guy who can do this thing or who does something specific so that you can use that guy to advance the plot. Now, it can't be somebody who's going to like show up and solve the problem for you. But if you need somebody to do some like mystic investigation stuff that nobody in the party is prepared to do, you can be like, hey, I know a guy. He's an archaeologist who works with this sort of thing all the time. So we're going to bring this to him.
Gotcha.
Right. And for the nature of the game that I'm playing, I feel that both of those have been very useful in both enhancing the game and also enhancing the investment that my players have in the game world.
Right.
So like the flashback mechanic, is a mechanic that I stole from Knives in the Dark.
Okay.
Where you're doing a heist, and in every heist movie ever, you see the thing that is happening, but you also flash back to the preparations that were happening to describe why the heist is going off the way that it is, and why the thing that looks like it's going to be the thing that sinks the heist isn't actually the thing that's going to sink the heist.
Right, right.
And so these flashbacks allow for that, right? And we've had a couple of really great interactions with them where one of our more recent games, an important thing fell off of the airship that they were in.
Okay.
And so one of my players went to dive after it and used a Talisman of Featherfall, but failed the dex save to like figure out where she should use that to not die.
Right.
Used a second one that she had to try again and failed that one as well. And then another player at the table used a flashback to slip her an extra one because she had been giving them out to everybody. And
okay, yeah,
he felt that like she could use that extra protection.
Right.
Right. And so she was able to grab a third one and use that one and finally made the save, which saved her character and also saved the priceless artifact they were hunting down because of the silly mechanic.
Right. Perfect.
Perfect.
Made it for a more cinematic, heroic moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And for the I know a guy, we've had a couple of really cool interactions. Like one of my players was trying to get more information about this magical artifact to his church that the magical artifact is connected to.
Okay.
And so his I know a guy was secretly telling me that he was going to his priest in town to tell him about what they had found. And 2 sessions later, they find out that the guy that stole the magic artifact and caused a bunch of like crazy havoc was his priest who was trying to get it out of the city.
I see.
Right. So I feel like both of those are very like genre enhancing house rules, which is kind of one of the reasons that I like to use house rules is to try and like bump up the flavor that I'm going for a game.
Yeah.
They've got a couple of downsides too, though.
Of course. I do try to very much limit house ruling in general. Okay. I tend to be very much on the side of like temporary house rules. Like, okay, I don't have a solution for this instant. Mm-hmm. I know it's going to take a little bit of digging. Here's my house rule for tonight. Right. And then I have homework. I mean, as the DM, you frequently have homework, but yes, I have homework. I need to go figure out how this actually works. And then if it doesn't have an actual solution after Googling and reading, then I will make I don't want to call it a house rule. I just want to make it an adjudication.
Right.
Like pending further publications to the contrary.
See, I usually like I have taken to house, like not house rules, but like rule checking using ChatGPT at the table. Because it's just so fast. It's so fast.
It's fast, but it's not necessarily accurate.
It has been accurate every single time I've done it.
I don't trust it because it's robots.
It is robots, and they're definitely going to take over the world, and they're absolutely going to take over my job as DM one day. But for the right now, they make my rules checking very easy.
Maybe you should just be better at your job and know the rules, huh? Ever thought of that?
System mastery is a difficult thing, and not everybody has. I'm still mixing up like 3.5 and 4th edition rules into my 5th edition game right now.
Oh, see, I don't have that problem. The 4th edition is so different from 5th edition that it's very clear which one is wrong.
Okay, I thought you were going to be good cop this episode. Goddamn.
Goodish cop.
All right.
Yeah, no, like, I don't want to say, like, mix them up, mm-hmm. but sometimes, like, I'll just accidentally house rule something that I want to happen because I think it's better. The other example of one that I do all the time mm-hmm. is flanking.
Right.
I think flanking needs to be, like, the fact that they've, like, tried to pretend that D&D combat isn't a tabletop war game mm-hmm. is very dumb to me. Like, you've put grids, you've put miniatures, you've put explicit rules. Please just let me, like, give people bonuses for thinking smart in a tactical situation. Because they want to try to win.
You give advantage for being adjacent.
No, I mean, like, if there's someone opposite you, you get plus one or plus two or whatever.
Right.
I don't like granting advantage per se.
Okay.
Because again, that's just like luck. I think you should be rewarded like more solidly.
I actually read a cool house rule on stacking advantage recently.
Okay.
I think it was actually today. The house rule that they came up with was that advantage and disadvantage can stack.
Okay.
But each additional instance of advantage or disadvantage invokes a plus two or minus two to your advantaged rolls.
Okay.
So if you get advantage twice, then you get a plus two on your roll. As well as
advantage. With advantage.
With advantage.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Which I thought was kind of neat. It fucks with all the math, but like, advantage itself kind of fucks with all the math.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. And then like advantage and disadvantage always cancel each other out. So.
Of course. Yeah. But like, okay. So let's say you have plus two advantage and disadvantage. Does that just like cancel out to advantage?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Which I think is actually better than the like one disadvantage cancels out three advantages.
Yeah.
Right. Cause like you can't like so many of fifth edition's statuses are like on off.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I didn't realize.
They're binary.
Yeah. I didn't realize how bad that was until I started playing Baldur's Gate.
Oh yeah.
And I didn't realize how binary the hidden status is.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Like if you were
not partially, you're just are or aren't.
Yeah. And if you are not, then you're not for everyone.
Yeah.
Right. So like I can't even be hidden from a person while being visible to somebody else. If I'm visible to anybody, I'm just not hidden.
Yeah.
Which is really awful when I'm trying to get my sneak attacks off. God damn it.
That's just why I never play sneak based characters. Just hit them with a stick.
Dude, the two hand crossbow fighter rogue bard build is busted as fuck.
Sorry, what?
There is a build and it only works in Baldur's Gate because fifth edition actually has reload rules. But there are hand crossbows, so you can dual wield crossbows.
Okay.
As a fighter you get extra attacks. As a rogue you get another bonus action, which you can use to shoot with your offhand weapon.
Right.
And then as a bard, you get all of the bard extra attacks and the like bardic actions that you can take with ranged weapons. And it's just you're moving and you're shooting like five times in a round, and it's absolutely ridiculous.
I wonder if this is what Zach is trying to do in our Baldur's Gate game. like accidentally. I know he's a rogue and he's got two hand crossbows. Okay. I wonder if this is the direction he's going.
Maybe. That and Throbarian is ridiculous. Anyway.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. Anyways, yeah, never mind.
And that's not what we're here to talk about. That's video games. We're not video game nerds.
That's not D&D.
And also, nerds. Baldur's Gate did a bunch of house ruling to make the video game better and easier to play. Check out that segue back to the top. All right, okay. So...
Anyways, house rules. House, we're talking...
how you doing, Josh?
Okay. I'm fine. It's been a long week. It's been a long week. It's late. Yeah. My brain is mostly okay, but occasionally not. So let's go back to the very loose framework we put it out for this episode of house rules question mark. Why do we house rule? I think I sort of already gave my answer to it, but I'll restate it. So I use house rules as a bandage in places that Wizards of the Coast forgot to playtest or whatever. Like,
okay.
Which is like most of their game. Yeah. But I think
it's funny you say that because there was much playtesting that went into 5th edition with like the D&D Next thing.
I understand that, but also I know that I as a person am the kind of guy who just like does not think in a straightforward way as most people do, right? Okay, you want an example of that? So I was playing in a campaign with a friend of mine and he made a custom magic item and gave it to my character. I was playing a paladin, and he gave me this pendant. The idea was it's a little spider-shaped pendant and it had a little pet spider that would come out onto your shoulder that could like wander over and make a little bite attack with some poison. And then it had this line that says, you can control all spiders in a 100-foot radius. All spiders.
Like activation or time limit or anything like that? Oh, dang.
Nope. Nope, that's the whole sentence.
Except spiders.
I became the villain from Big Hero 6.
All right.
But instead of tiny, like, gyroid-shaped robots, it was spiders. Okay. I had a cape made of spiders. I was floating off the ground on a wave of spiders that would propel me across the landscape. There's no time limit and I control all of them. And I don't know if you've ever Googled how many spiders are in like any given forested area, but it's way more than you think.
Yeah.
And so if I just keep them coming with me, eventually I create this like death ball of spiders, which they may not be individually a lot, but when you have millions of them, we captured some guys, or there's a patrol of them out in the woods that we wanted to scare off. So I pulled a Charlotte's Web and had my spiders like run up into the trees and like spell out like go away. And then I like floated up behind them with my cape of spiders and they were just like, oh shit, that's fucking terrifying, because of course it is, right? And then we captured a guy after a fight and we were interrogating him. And so I just started sending spiders into orifices, which is compelling.
Is it? It's compelling.
Yeah. A spider up the nose gets your attention, and a spider up the urethra gets answers.
I don't know if that's true, Josh. I think that a spider up the urethra is screaming. I think a spider aimed at my urethra gets screaming.
I was going to say the threat of a spider up the urethra gets answered. Okay, gets answers real fast. Anyways, so it turns out when you don't play test, if you don't play test things with Josh in mind, bad things happen. So I am Josh proofing my own games against my other players with various small house rules, and then also just fixing things that I think are dumb, like the charge rule. I think everyone just basically I'm playing it as everyone has the charger feet, period, because running in a straight line is not rocket science, and putting the sharp end in front of you is not rocket science. And I'm pretty sure even the dumbest barbarian in the world can do those simultaneously. I think
that you are giving dumb people entirely too much credit.
I played football with them, and I played football with a guy who had to write left and right on his own wrists so he wouldn't have to, quote, think about it during the game.
My mom did that to me once, and she wrote them on the wrong hands.
Your mom was a nurse, too.
Yeah, she wrote them on the wrong hands, and I was going to my grandmother's house.
And that's why you guys lost the provincial championship?
No, I was going to my grandmother's house, and so my mom wrote me instructions on how to get to my grandmother's house, and then wrote left and right on my hands, and then I ended up in a completely different neighborhood because I was following the instructions based on the writing on my hands.
Oh my god.
My mom had to like get in the car and try and like figure out how like what the opposite of her instructions would be. To try and find
Oh man, back in the days when you just let kids loose into the wilderness with handwritten instructions.
Yeah, I was still in Calgary at the time, so that would have been
I thought this was Stettler behavior, but Calgary's even worse.
No, it was, I would have been grade 1-2.
That's a real city. Oh, yeah. No.
Yeah, just a youngin'.
Anyways, so we know why I house rule to fix things. Why do you house rule?
I house rule for a few reasons. The first is thematic, right? Like I like to introduce rules that are going to elevate themes. So if we are going to be playing 5th edition D&D, and we need to include some stuff about romance, then 5th edition D&D is not prepared to do that game. Neither is Josh.
Correct.
5th edition D&D is not prepared to do that game. Or like if we're doing like courtly intrigue, 5th edition D&D is really good at showing up and hitting stuff real hard until it dies. It's not as good at hanging out in high society and making sure that the like king and the bishop are both getting their needs met from this arrangement that's happening with their daughters. Right. Like,
despite having Greyhawk as a setting.
Yeah. Yeah. So like adding additional layers of rules to sell your themes is one of the biggest reasons that I start to introduce house rules. And like to focus on different aspects of a system as well. Right. Like, adding in additional rules for death saves, for instance, changes the way that you interact with characters that are downed.
Yeah, definitely.
If you go rules as written, then when you roll a d20 and you get a natural 20, you get 2 stabilization checks on your death save track. And if you go with a lot of people's house rules, you actually heal and you can get up and you're back in the fight.
Hold on. The rolling a 20 puts you at like 1 health and you're good to go.
Does it?
Yeah.
Probably fucking up my additions again. Give me a second. I'm going to go ask ChatGPT.
Anyways. No, you dare, you doing traitor.
It. Doing it right now.
No.
If I roll a natural 20,
All right, so I'm going to the back death of the PHB save. Under D for death save. He throws page 197. Page 197.
You are correct. Gain one health point.
If you roll a 20 on the D20, you regain one hit point. Hooray. Anyways, that's besides the point. Also, I'd let you know that I am as fast as ChatGPT at finding an answer.
Yes. Yes, you are. assuming that you're not in the middle of running a game and you have like five people asking you different questions. Anyways,
besides the point.
Okay. Yeah. Again, either one of those, if you house rule it, like if you house rule it that you stabilize but don't get up, or you house rule it that you gain additional health, or you, I think, was it fourth edition, you were able to spend a healing surge if you rolled a 20 on a death save?
Yeah. Yeah. Because you could roll and then you would just like stabilize if someone came over and gave you the help action or something, or the heal action. And then if you rolled a 20, you burned a healing surge for free and then could stand up on your turn. Fifth edition, you regain a hit point and then can stand up on your turn.
That's
which one hit point is not that
depending
much
on my initiative order. That could be me being down again immediately. Probably.
Yeah,
will be.
For sure.
But like changing the way that you deal with those, right? Injuries is a really popular house rule that I disagree with wholeheartedly.
If
you take a certain amount of damage, or if you are downed, or if you're downed by a certain amount of damage, then you gain a permanent impact on your character. There are systems that handle that okay. I think Shadowrun is probably one of the better ones that will handle like permanent changes to your character's abilities.
I haven't played Shadowrun, so I'll take the word for it.
I've only played the earlier editions of Shadowrun. I haven't played some of the more recent ones, but I recall that like in both directions, getting like enhancements and then also taking ridiculous injuries or like taking too many drugs would have like permanently impact your character.
I see. Yeah, because I think I saw like a table at some point that was like, hey, maybe if your character's down, you should roll on this after to see what kind of debilitating thing happens to them.
I've almost never played with it. I could see myself playing with it in a I was gonna say the G word, but I know that you don't like it when anybody says that when it's not related to 40K. A particularly grim, dark fantasy campaign where like the consequences of fight are very real.
I was going to say, it's funny you say that, because I was going to say the one place that I could see myself maybe wanting to use that is Dark Sun.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see Dark Sun being...
Where, like, the whole world is just punishment and brutalizing, and your weapons are breaking, and, hey, if your weapons are breaking, why aren't your characters?
Yeah. Yeah. And, again, not a lot of use for that. Like, I certainly wouldn't use it in Eberron. Where, like, your characters are being, like, big damned heroes and high-flying, crazy adventure time.
Well, and there's also just always magical everything to fix you up.
Yeah.
Like, in a world where they created robot humans, I'm sure they can get you a really good prosthetic leg.
Oh, man. The fact that we didn't get, like, deeper into the idea of, like, warforged limbs.
Sentient limbs?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Or, like... You could kind of go like a Dr. Octopus route with it, where it's got like a small intelligence to help guide what it is the commands that you're giving it. And then like what happens if those intelligences go rogue?
What happens if your arm intelligence and your leg intelligence don't get along?
Okay, I think I just found my new character. it's such a great idea. I'll just build the character as a Warforged, and then like
And then he has a right arm and a left leg that don't like each other,
and that's like the only bits of him that are actually.
And they have like a contentious workplace relationship.
The rest of him is human, like, stats wise. He's And then just like occasionally having to deal with the fact that like this guy is,
I was gonna say, what if occasionally he has to be HR for his own limbs to resolve a workplace dispute?
Look, she touched me in a way that I did not appreciate, and I can't handle that in an environment that's supposed to be professional.
I feel like Lefty is really just like undermining my authority and my role here as the primary weapon holder.
Well, maybe if you held weapons better instead of like a little bitch.
Oh, maybe if you were constantly limping to one side, so I had to course correct every time I was swinging.
Such a micromanager, good gods.
Well, someone's gonna manage things around here. We gotta live.
You know what would be a lot of fun? If you had two or three players playing that character.
So I kind of did a similar thing in a game I was playing for a few years where I ran with the idea of half orc being like half an orc.
Okay.
Like he's just stitched together from various battlefield pieces and then reanimated by the local like junior necromancer who was just trying things out. And so like he's literally half an orc. And then I, over the course of play with him, I was like, well, what if like other pieces of him are also not human? And then like there's five different like voices in his head that are the different constituent like souls arguing over who gets to fully control the body, right? And like then maybe in different situations as a community they would like let a certain representative come to the forefront and speak for the group, right? Like
that's great.
Social situations, it might be the dwarf or the elf, and then combat happens and the orc's like, me turn.
Or better, it's just like during the combat situation the orc is feeling jilted and is just like, no, I don't fight. And then like during the social situation the orc is like me turn.
Yeah. Like when the Hulk won't come out of Bruce and he's like, come on, like we gotta save our lives. And it's like, no, I don't wanna.
Then he's there for the party. Elf.
Yeah. But then, like, the elf spirit that was really just, like, the foot that happened to be there is like, I guess I gotta take over now. And he, like, none of his combat moves work because he's used to having a much more agile body. And what he's got now is this just, like, lump of muscles.
And, right, when you said half an orc, I assumed you meant just, like, the left half of the orc. Just like split right down the middle and that's all the orc you have.
Initially that was the idea, but then I was like, well, what if we really went with Frankenstein's monster and it was just like whatever pieces he were most complete, he stitched them together.
I think I sent it to you, the campaign idea for like a bunch of like characters that are half human, half something else, and then the campaign ideas, all of them are trying to find their dad.
Oh no. And it's just like one guy.
Yeah.
The consequences of being a horny bard are child support payments across multiple species.
Like an entire village of children of different species come banging down your door 20 years later.
That's really funny. Like there's a dragonborn and a half orc and a Goliath and like it's just like all these oh man. Sorry, not a Goliath, a mule. Yeah, that'd be funny.
A lot of fun. Especially like as the DM, I would love playing that dad.
Yeah.
It's like
the dad's like the BBEG, but he's just like a piece of shit who's trying to dodge out of child support payments.
Kid, I don't know what to tell you. The 40s were a weird time. I was touring around. I was basically homeless. You know, I'm doing pretty good now.
What was your mother's name? No, I've never met anyone like that. No, it's gonna be me.
Oh shit, I bagged an elf for real.
And then just one look at his like dragonborn kid and he's like, oh, and it like brings back like just the worst night, or of,
the
his
best
life.
Night of his life.
Play it how you wish. Yeah. And it's just, it's like every adventure is just him skipping out of town and them trying to chase him down again.
All right, kids, I gotta go buy some milk.
I'll be back. I need some tobacco.
For a couple of cartons of smokes. I'll be right back. So good. All right. House rules.
All right.
Well, actually, interestingly, I've heard, I don't know how accurate this is, but I have heard rumors that they are going to be doing away with the half species in Dungeons and Dragons in the future.
I don't know if I like that.
I don't know until I see how they handle it. Because
half elves have been like a very defined, distinct thing for a long
time.
And I get the squeamishness over what they used to consider the origin of half orcs. I can understand wanting them to change it so that, you know, people aren't always playing the results of abuse. Like that. Okay, cool, great. But like I think I prefer a world that's open to interracial marriages, if that makes sense.
I think
another
one of the concerns was just like the idea of distinct biracial individuals. Right? Like just that they are statistically distinct for being biracial. And like the the idea that I would probably have for that would be like pick one or the other that you're going to be statistically. And then that's just part of your background, is that your like parents are an elf and a human. If that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, rather than make it a statistics thing, instead of making it like a system thing, make it a background thing instead.
But would it confer any like advantages or disadvantages? Like I understand that they've got this design philosophy right now that's like, we want everyone to be able to do exactly what they want regardless of like what they're playing, but I feel like that sort of like homogenization of everything really just weakens like the interesting fabric of the universe. Like as much as I understand their like, okay, so a big change that came about a couple years ago in the playtesting thing where they were like, hey, by the way, like orcs aren't evil anymore, like by default. Right. And I'm like, okay, I get it. They explicitly said they were touching on a lot of like the weird, racist undertones on like the orc origin story specifically. But the getting rid of like racial specific traits in your fantasy game feels to me like you're putting real world politics and sensibilities onto a game system. And part of what makes game systems interesting and unique are disparities and differences and leaning into those.
Yeah, I think.
Does that make sense?
I get it. I think my design sensibilities are a bit more in line with Wizards of the Coast on this, where like, yes, you are playing a character of a species that is stereotypically more in line with like being a lithe and dexterous type person, but there are always outliers, and there are always going to be people who are just like, yes, you are an elf and elves do tend towards being lithe and dexterous, but you're just a hunk of meat, right? Like you have spent your entire life working out constantly. You are just beefcake. So,
okay. But like, I get that, but like, even if we talk about like real world analogies, like that's fine, but there is a, like we're talking about self-selecting populations and no amount of working out on an elf is going to get them to, like, if you did the same thing on a Goliath, the differences are still going to be massive, right? For two people going down the same path because of like the frame that a Goliath has. And they're just like, you know, genetic gifting or whatever it is.
I do get that. Right. I think that for the game like, design that they are aiming for, which is that your character can be whatever it is you want your character to be, it makes a bit more sense to not be beholden to those stereotypes and to be able to do whatever it is you want with the characters. That said, I do think that there is a place for there to be games where like species does have a mechanical impact on things like your character creation. I just don't know if Dungeons and Dragons is necessarily the place where I would want that. Because, like, D&D has a lot of weird baggage.
I understand that, but, like, what I'm saying is those limitations, I think, are part of what make for interesting characters and interesting, like, ideas. Like, so I know someone, so the one shot I ran, someone wanted to make a gnome barbarian, which is like awesome, cool. They wanted to use a great axe, which on the one hand, if you like look at the rules as written, don't do that. You're a small creature. You are going to have disadvantage on every attack you make with this thing, regardless of how, like if you roll your stats, regardless of how godly you roll those stats and how well that like works out mechanically, you're always going to have disadvantage.
You still have disadvantage if you take great weapon.
I don't know. I didn't look that up. I don't think so. But whatever. The point is, I think that would be very, very funny.
Yes.
Is to essentially have a gnome swinging an axe that weighs as much as it does, and every spin is just swinging for the fences in for the fight of his life. He's going to spin a full 360, and he might hit, but he might not. Right? And that comes down to having like limitations on what being a gnome means. Yeah, he wants to be a barbarian. He's been working out his whole life and has so much rage. He's also 3 feet tall. You just can't get away from that.
Yeah,
right?
But at the same time, I think like the proficiency of the character, like if they've gotten pretty good at doing that spin to win strategy, then maybe the limitation that's there doesn't necessarily apply.
But he's 25 pounds, and so is a great axe. Right?
So it's a funny mental image, but I don't know if it necessarily requires a statistic systemic answer. I think that if you want to play a gnome barbarian with a great axe, and you can think of a way to make that work, then I'm down with it.
No, I think you should play a gnome barbarian with a great axe. I think it's character building that it doesn't work perfectly, but they're still so convicted.
For the first
four
levels, and then they catch the feet, and now they're good. They found it.
I don't know about feats. No, but that's just it. Like, so many of those, like, what you would call a disadvantage or whatever, can get leveled out by taking specific things to counteract that, which is fine. It just also means that you won't have like the highest of highs and the lowest of lows anymore, which is also fine.
Find that the design choice to remove negatives in general is an issue with Wizards. So, like,
yeah,
I don't think it's specific to species selection, but I do think that there's a tendency recently towards moving away from anything that might be perceived as punishing a player for making a choice. Taking on a disadvantage purposefully.
They just want to remove negativity as like a thing, which I don't agree with.
Good vibes only.
Yeah.
Like as a design choice, not my favorite.
Yeah. You go, bestie, if you want to. It's just.
But I feel like there are other ways that you could introduce those kinds of drawbacks to a player character. Like, if you were to expand the backgrounds system, right? Like, the background system as it currently exists is pretty anemic. But if you were to expand that out to include like a benefits and flaws system, right? Then you would have the ability to add a like background for being a biracial character, right? Because that is going to have a social impact on how your character plays, most likely. And not necessarily going to have like specific drawbacks or benefits attached to it, but like give you a range of a few that you might be able to pick.
Right? Yeah.
Or, having socioeconomic class involved in your backgrounds a bit more. Mm. So like right now, if you pick one of the backgrounds that is from one of the poorer socioeconomic classes, it's still all upside. Right. You get the skills that you are good at from that background, and that's pretty much it. Right. So like, I feel like expanding that is a better direction than trying to tie those things directly to character, species, and race. And we'll have to see how they handle it before both of us house rule the shit out of it, because we're probably going to both house rule the shit out of it.
Oh, 100%.
I mean, I am. I don't know about you. You don't like house rules as much.
I don't like house rules. Okay. Frankly, if they're, like, I have remained, I would say, intentionally in the dark about the amount of 1D&D changes that are coming. Coming very fast. Frankly, I'm at the point now, having heard the things that I have, that if there's too many things for me to house rule to my preference, I'm leaving the system. Like,
oh, no.
I will finally, I will finally try something else.
Pathfinder podcast.
This will be the hill I die. I was going to say, you could scare me into trying Pathfinder as much as I don't want to.
It's just 3.5 D&D. Like, you played
for real
a session or two of 3.5 D&D?
I will become a Daggerheart purist. I don't know what. Like,
I am interested in trying the system.
I want to see, like, I know the playtest is out there right now. I'm not touching it because I just don't have the mental space to do it right now, but I'm curious what he's up to.
Like, my crew right now is pretty invested in the campaign that we're in, and I don't know if I have the energy to go and find a campaign to try the weird shit. Right?
Like, yeah.
Because you know me, I'm always happy to try the weird shit, but like...
Yeah, frankly, like, with the people I'm playing with right now, there's a good chance we won't move off of 5th.
Yeah.
Like, we just won't for a while. Because we're halfway through a campaign, we've got more stuff coming down the pike, and frankly, if I want to start a new group, everyone I know has 5th edition stuff that wants to play. There's no reason for us to jump just yet, because they haven't published dick. And I would rather invest my time in doing the homework to drag people back to 4th edition than convert them to what's there with 1D&D.
Well, I think for me, it's like
less
with 1D&D and more with like other game systems. I want to try Daggerheart. I want to see what's up with Wildsea.
Yeah.
I want to play that game where you're a bunch of dark elves holding a revolution. Spire. And like the other game that they came out with for the same system, right? Like, I want to try all of these games, and I don't currently have a crew that will do that. Because we play once every couple of weeks, and we're like 7 sessions into our current campaign, right? So like, switching gears right now would be pretty big. We're taking a break between arcs to play some one-shots, but it's just one-shots. Like, I don't know if I would be able to get like the full Daggerheart experience in a one-shot.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
Anyway, we've got a few minutes left. What makes a good house rule versus a bad house penis? You wrote in our rule, in our guide thing, good house penis versus bad house penis.
I can't believe it took you an hour to notice.
I noticed
that.
It a while ago, but I left it for the bit.
Okay, so good house rules versus bad house rules.
What is a good house rule? Why is it a good house rule?
So I would say, from my experience, a good house rule is something that allows the game to flow more naturally and operate more consistently. It removes ambiguity. That's a good house rule. Or, like in your case, a good house rule is something that enhances the theme or the setting in some way.
Right? Interestingly, that isn't my metric. So like my metric on a good house rule versus a bad house rule is good house rules create more opportunities for interesting choices and decisions.
Okay.
So like if you have a house rule that is restrictive, I will almost always consider that a bad house rule. Right. If it is limiting choices, if it's stopping somebody from trying something, then that to me is going to be a bad house rule. If it is going to...
Yeah, that's totally fair.
If it's going to offer new opportunities for choices and decisions, then I feel like that's a solid direction to go for those. So like for the two house rules that I'm using right now, I know a guy gives my players the opportunity to make a whole NPC. And like decide what their relationship with that person is going to be. And go and talk to that person, they have new and interesting choices and decisions that they can make. Right. And it's codified in that house rule. Flashback mechanic, same deal. You have the ability to look at a situation as it is unfolding, and then you have a creative choice or decision to go back and tell me how you're going to like work on that before it happens. Right.
So yeah.
I feel like that's really the line that I draw, is like, does it create better opportunities for choices and decisions?
Okay. That's legit. So then by that metric, what it like you've explained a bad house rule is restricting choices. I would say for me, a bad house rule is anything that's based around a DM's personal preference. Like,
oh no.
Yeah.
Keith, gird your loins.
Yeah, you thought I was gonna be nice the whole time. No. Not to this guy. No, I really don't like when a DM, like, there's a functional rule in place and the DM just like doesn't like the way it's done for some reason. Like they just want to revert changes back to a previous edition or something like that.
That is absolutely a thing you do, Josh.
I don't revert changes. I add options, as in you should be able to flank and charge for free because that's normal combat behavior.
Right. Or like bringing back minions. Yeah. And
I didn't revert anything. I added a new creature type. To the fifth edition because of the game. It's
absolutely your preference that there be minions.
No, my preference is that combat doesn't take a fucking hour when there's six goblins, okay?
There are definitely some expressions of that I've seen, though, where it's just like, I don't let there be elves in my games.
Yeah. Or, hey, we talked about it a few weeks ago. The guy who's like, I don't like rogues. Right. We had one bad rogue experience, therefore don't play rogues.
No, all rogues in the entire universe can get fucked. And you should definitely play a paladin instead, because that makes sense with the character archetype that you've expressed interest in playing, I guess.
Yeah. Because definitely rogues and paladins are the same thing, right? A paladin is just a rogue for
Jesus. Man. Rogue for Jesus is a good name for a role-playing game. We should make a role-playing game called Rogue for Jesus.
It's the name of my fourth wave ska band.
Hey, thanks for making it all the way through this episode of No Plot, Only Lore. If you're looking for more, you can always find us at noplotonlylore.com. and on all the very best podcast platforms. If you like what you heard today, please share, rate, and review the show to feed my never-ending need for attention and validation.